All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first three segments with Peter Buchvar. Boy, we covered a lot, and I think everyone can understand just the different world that we are in this year with how markets are reacting and what central banks are doing as well. And that's even outside of this ongoing war in Ukraine. We are wrapping up the show with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetalsreport.com. Craig, let's just get your broad assessment here. I mentioned on the onset of this show and the day when I dropped in back on Thursday of this week that taking a kind of more broad look at the gold sector, seems like everything is lining up positively. And I'm not one to say that very often, but gold stabilized above 1900. The majors are doing well. There is this general rotation of money into some of the safer assets, and gold is finally being viewed as one of those. What's your outlook here for gold? Is, again, holding strongly above 1900 and finally some money flowing into the bigger stocks, at least?
Oh my gosh, Corey, I'm gonna have to put you on hold while I sell everything.
I know. It's scary. I'm not used to feeling this way, Craig.
No, I have to make sure I listen to Peter Buchvar as well. I've gotten to know him over the last year or so. He's a very sharp guy, so I'm sure he had all kinds of good insights. And there's a lot going on. Gold looks good for a lot of the reasons we've been discussing for years. Silver's picking up. There are commodity shortages that have developed over the last several months that are now being exacerbated by the Russian-Ukraine situation. Inflation is raging and only going to get worse. Hard to see how a 25 basis point Fed funds rate hike from 0 to 25 basis points is going to get it under control. The bond market, though it has been selling off and longer rates have been moving up, the bond market is starting to point toward what we call a policy error by the Fed. Is that the Fed's going to start hiking just in time to send us into some kind of stagflationary recession. On Thursday, this was noteworthy. We noticed on, at least as the futures contracts go, in the silver market, we got what's called a bullish cross, where a shorter term moving average, a 50-day moving average, moved up through the 200-day. Without getting, the technical analysis of that, that's certainly something, though, that a lot of traders and trading machines are programmed to notice. And Thursday saw a big move up in silver as well. The shares look pretty good. The only downside to all of this is in all the years that I've been watching the precious metals, usually when things look pretty good, that's the time you got to sell some. You get that kind of counterintuitive component. However, big picture, a lot of the stuff we've been discussing for years, Corey, is starting to play out.
Well, Craig, it's interesting that you brought up the Golden Cross and silver, because silver has finally started playing a little catch up to gold. It's outperformed gold a number of days over the last few weeks, but it still hasn't broken out anywhere close to its all-time high like gold is getting closer to doing, and gold just did 2 years ago. So it's been a little bit of a laggard, but when you see those shorter term moving averages moving up to the longer ones, it just means that momentum is picking up in the shorter term, and so is pricing. And we saw that exact same thing in GDX and GDXJ. So I'm glad you brought it up, because we've seen golden crosses around the board. And when you see the miners outperforming the metals, both the silver miners outperforming silver and the gold miners outperforming gold, and silver starting to outperform gold, that's usually getting things lined up in the right batting order for a more bullish move. Do you think this could have some legs to it, or is it time to start selling?
Yeah, that's the important thing for people that are listening to us and have not been taking positions or just starting to look at the metals and the miners for the first time. These, what we call bullish crosses, as you said, Shad, are a sign that they don't usually happen at the end of a move. Let's put it that way, where you might get what we call negative crosses or death crosses instead. So we're probably in the early stages of this. I really thought that this year would unfold in this manner, but more gradually. But of course, I wasn't anticipating all of the stuff regarding Russia and Ukraine either. So we're headed in the direction I thought we'd go this year. It's just happening a little quicker. And the precious metals in all their forms, look pretty attractive. And again, we're seeing such a challenging time in the commodity markets in that, you know, even before the Russia-Ukraine crisis flared up, there were signs of significant shortages of metal in the primary metal markets of London. And if I don't know how closely people have followed this over the last couple of weeks, but the nickel market in particular has had some extraordinary events taking place in it. And even as the week wrapped up, it was back to moving up the limit every day in London. It's not just nickel, though. It's zinc, aluminum, copper also is in tight supply in London. And you wonder how much that can spill over into silver, too. So there's just a lot going on. And the last thing I would add is the maybe with some of the news that was a little bit under the radar here last week, this I think it's hit maybe Wednesday or Thursday of last week, was this news that Russia said, which you could probably have seen this coming, said, we consider you an unfriendly nation, we will only accept payment for our natural gas and our other natural resources in rubles. But then they further went on to say, and this at least didn't get a whole lot of press at the time, they said they also accept gold. And so that's one of those noteworthy little signposts that people might want to make sure they noticed as well. It's a very, very interesting time to be in the precious metals. And I'd encourage all of your listeners to start paying close attention.
So, Craig, as precious metals focused, look, we all hear these comments of a crash or even a great reset, taking it a step further where it's a very different financial world than we currently have. How do you balance those two out? Because I do see the potential for a market crash, even correction here. Markets are due for one. The whole great reset thing can almost be used by some as more a marketing ploy than anything. But hey, if it does happen, wow, what a different world we could be in. How do you balance those two narratives?
Well, you know, it's something that's always been on our minds, right? You know, the current fiat currency system, you know, with the dollar as its anchor, has been getting more wobbly by the year. And, you know, history is replete with examples of, you know, you kind of hand out baton from one reserve currency to another. I'd watch more closely maybe this in the interim, and that'd be the U.S. bond market. You know, it was just 3 weeks ago this weekend that the U.S. and the EU, all of the NATO countries, decided to cut Russia off from the SWIFT system of international payments. At the same time, they also froze about $300 billion of Russian assets, foreign currency reserves that were held outside of Russia. Okay, if you're the U.S. and Great Britain and the like, okay, that doesn't seem to impact you very greatly. But boy, everybody else around the world that owns foreign currency reserves in dollars or dollar equivalents like treasuries had to sit up and take notice. It's like, wait a second. If we don't play ball with what you want us to do, you've just shown us now your hand that you'll cut us off. Well, curiously, in the time since, the yield on the 10-year note has gone pretty much straight up. It was 1.74% on Friday, March the 4th, before that weekend. This week, it got as high as 2.4%. I mean, that's a huge move on a percentage basis in 3 weeks. And rates go up as people sell their bonds. You know, there's all this thought out there that, you know, to preclude a market crash, if interest rates get too high like they did in late 2018 and Chairman Powell steps in and starts adding liquidity to preclude a market crash and, you know, create, you know, to try to stop everything from getting away from him. Well, what if he can't stop it this time? And what if rates, you know, instead of stopping at 3%, go to 4 or 5? I mean, that's got to be factored in as well. How would that impact the stock market? How would that impact future quantitative easing programs? This is a, like I said, this is a very, very interesting time to be monitoring the markets and trying to make sense of it all. It's not easy.
Yeah, Craig, they may not be able to put Humpty Dumpty back together again after this one, and it'll be interesting to see them try. But you brought up two good points there. One was really the bond bubble maybe had bursted in 2020 when we saw those really low rates, and ever since then, there's been a steady increase in rates. But there's also only a 20 bip spread between the 2 and the 10-year treasury. So there's a really flattened yield curve in this environment, and if it inverts, that's also the signal that there could be tougher times in the economy. So that would tie into the whole recessionary idea and possibly the market pullback. But on the Great Reset side, kicking Russia off the SWIFT system is a totally different animal, because if you're China and you're watching, if you're India and you're watching, if you're Brazil, you're seeing this happen. And there's already plans for those nations to start working together to maybe come up with a different system. There's already something that's been signed by 100 countries called Project Sandman, initiated by Saudi Arabia, where there's 100 countries willing to try a different system. And then we have these high oil prices and OPEC not wanting to play the petrodollar. So wouldn't you say that the Great Reset concept is really about a new reserve currency and a new global alignment of money, a new Bretton Woods, if you will? And really, the recessionary fear is more of a U.S. phenomenon that could hit the markets here.
I'd say you're right on both points, Shad. As you mentioned, the yield curve. There are instruments that trade that are actually a one-year forward projection of where interest rates will be. And that's already showing an inverted yield curve for next year at this time, meaning that short-term rates are higher than medium and long-term rates. And that is almost always a precursor of recession. That's probably all part of why the general stock market is holding up, because the stock market's already looking past all of this tightening and assuming that the Fed is just going to turn around and start cutting again and adding liquidity. I mean, talk about front running. I mean, they're front running events that might take place a year from now. Getting back though to the major kind of epical changes that we're talking about here, you know, the line I've often used, you know, comes from Lenin, which is, you know, sometimes decades worth of change happens in a couple of weeks. And it's pretty likely that we are in that type of situation now. Saudi Arabia said just last week that they're going to start selling crude oil in yuan, Chinese yuan. Not that maybe the U.S. will become, won't just simply become the, you know, longer the reserve currency. There'll just be other currencies that'll be trusted to be transacted in. And the U.S. dollar will still be important, but just not the sole reserve currency anymore. And as for the implications of that, for everybody listening, let me put it into Econ 101 terms. It's just a function of supply and demand. I mean, we have been supplying dollars unfettered, unbacked by anything for 50 years. And now we have $30 trillion of an accumulated deficit in the U.S. Well, those dollars, there's been demand for those dollars. Therefore, inflation hasn't been out of control. It's been everybody else's problem. Well, if all of a sudden you start cutting into the demand for dollars by offering other currencies you can transact in, or by company or countries selling their products like oil in something other than dollars, well, all of a sudden you have considerably less demand at a time when supply continues to rise, you know, a couple trillion dollars a year in new debt. So that you, again, think of any product, you know, I think maybe we might have talked about this a couple weeks ago in these terms. Think of oranges. You know, if there's a bumper crop of oranges one year, at the same time it's decided that orange juice is a carcinogen, you're going to have a massive supply and falling demand. And that's what will take place in this reset idea with the dollar. You're going to have ongoing massive supply, but falling demand. That produces a lower value every time. And as the value of the dollar falls, this inflation, your standard, your cost of living and standard of living and everything else just continues to worsen. And that, unfortunately, is the path that we're headed down.
Boy, oh boy, let's see if these rate hikes do anything to slow that inflation. Just a quick comment regarding the gold stocks then, Craig. Majors have done well. The juniors still, though, have broadly lagged. Still a couple juniors that have done well. I know you follow top to bottom a lot of stocks, large and small. What's your assessment? It's still that lagging nature, and not only the juniors, actually, also a lot of mid-tiers and development companies.
Yeah, this can be very frustrating if you're kind of not real familiar with the sector or how it works. But this is exactly how it always works, because so few individuals, retail investors, institutional investors, and the like, have any exposure to gold at all. I mean, the global asset allocation to precious metals and mining shares and equivalents is like less than 1%, like 0.5% global asset allocation. Nobody even pays attention to it. And so typically when gold and silver start to go into favor, you know, think of it as like this. You call up your stockbroker and say, hey, gold's going up. I want some exposure. Buy me a gold miner. Well, maybe they might buy you some ETF, or they'll, you know, the stockbroker whose firm does all their research for them, he doesn't know anything about any gold miners. And so maybe he goes to the ETF holdings page and sees that Newmont is the number one holding and says, it looks at the chart, sees it's going up, says, okay, we'll buy you some Newmont. And so the large companies, which are more easily understood, followed, you know, there might be some research notes on it, they get bought first because that's the easiest thing to do. Then as the bull market continues, that's when people start to dig a little bit deeper and they recognize they get a little more leverage out of a junior producer or some company that's just about ready to go into production or something like that. Then all of a sudden, you know, those shares start to go up as, you know, as referenced maybe by the GDXJ. And then when things really get exciting, you know, and some would say frothy, or you're getting into the eighth or ninth inning of everything, that's when everybody's like, oh yeah, look, at this price, you know, these ounces in the ground become economical and this exploration company is really going to take off. And that's when you get, you know, the penny stocks, the, you know, a lot of companies that are under a dollar start to really pick up. So it's a normal part of the cycle. It shouldn't be anything that frustrates anybody. In fact, it should be a good sign that we are still in those early innings, as we discussed, right, as we began this conversation.
It is still crazy to see just how little value ounces in the ground are garnering. Doesn't even matter what country you're in. So, yeah, to your point there, Craig, we definitely haven't gotten to that stage in this game, or I guess you could call it bull market. Craig, we're going to wrap it up here. Great chatting with you. Thanks for taking the final segment of this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Everybody else, thank you for tuning in to this weekend's edition. And make sure you go back throughout that week and listen to all of the interviews Shad posted throughout this week on our website, kereport.com, or podcast, Corlin Economics Report. Craig, everyone else, thanks again for your time. I hope you all have a great weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.